right?
Design. And I just want to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us today. My name is Sarah Alsbaugh and I will be here as your moderator. If you have a question either for Linda or for Jean, please type that into the question section of your GoToWebinar control panel and I will relay those on to them on your behalf. And if you have a technical question, you can type it in there as well and I'll get back to you regarding that. Also, we're recording today's art chat, so if you know somebody who wasn't able to join us, you can feel free to share this link with them. That will be up on the Artist Network YouTube page later this week. So without further ado, I'll turn things over to Linda and her guest, Jean. So welcome, you guys. I'm so excited to have you here.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks. And I'm actually excited to be talking with Jean again as well. And welcome, everyone out there in the listening land or whatever we want to call it out there. But anyway, Jean and I actually met in person a couple years ago, I guess now, at the Representational Art Conference. And I will bring Jean in on the conversation here in a few minutes. But I wanted to actually tell you all about some free stuff, because free stuff is always good. So if you head over to my website after the webinar is done, and the website is www.lindafisler.com, and sign up for my newsletter, there's a free art instruction book that you can download, and there's also a free prequel to my to the fiction novel. Jean,
so sorry.
That's okay. So if you guys head over to the website, you can download some free stuff, and then you'll also be on the new email list that we're pulling in. Jean, are you okay?
Everything's going off at once. I turned everything off, got everything away, and yet it's in again. There we are. So sorry. You go ahead.
That's fine. I was just going to say that Jean and I met at TRAC, so this may be a little crazy because Jean and I hung out for the 3 or 4 days at TRAC and had a really great time, and so we kind of know each other very well, and we've been in touch via Facebook and different things also throughout the years. So Jean, welcome to our chat. So good to talk with you again.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, Linda. What a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. Actually, we talked about doing this a while ago, so my apologies for not having you on sooner, because I should have. But one of the things we're going to talk about, and I want you to start actually talking about your art journey and how you came to the process of what you're doing today. And, you know, abstract design is just something that I think every painting should have in it. So we'll talk about some tips on how we can start to bring in some abstraction into our work. But start off first with your journey and talk a little bit about your process.
Well, I don't know how far back you want me to go, but
when you were three,
the beginning of time. Yeah. I've always been involved with the arts. I took a few degrees in university. My folks both grew up in the Depression and therefore didn't encourage one to go into the arts, because you had to get a profession that would get you through life. So
right.
all of my options for both of my degrees were in the fine art faculty, and so I really got up into the 300 levels of the classes and kind of felt like I beat the system a little bit,
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I worked for several years and worked less and less and painted more and more until I just quit my day job and gave up pension and all that stuff to paint full time. And since that, I've had so many wonderful, wonderful opportunities over the years, and this is an example of one of them. Mm-hmm. But, I've had a piece go into the Royal Collection. I've been able to write a couple of books. I have another one in the works right now. And I've also been involved with the Artist Magazine for many, many years, and now as well the Acrylic Artist. Mm-hmm. And I've written several blogs also for F&W over the years. So there's just been, you know, a number of opportunities that I never would have dreamed of as a result of the arts. How does that affect my process? Well, I think in the early days, I was really interested in watercolor and the transparency of watercolor, but there were all these rules that were set up to, I think, prevent a lot of artists from really pushing their creativity. Watercolor is a funny thing. Some people will have so many rules. And I had the pleasure of going to the Winsor Newton factory in England before it was taken away or shut down. And you could see how they make a bunch of pigments, and then they just split the pigments up for oil, for watercolor, for acrylic. And so all the pigments are the same. It's just the binders that are different. So why are we putting all these restrictions on a watercolor? Why do you have to put it down and leave it and just put one or two layers down? And so I kind of self-imposed this feeling of wanting to push the opacity and the darks and make it rich like an oil might be. And so I guess right from the start, I always had a feeling of pushing concepts. So from there, you know, I went more into acrylics. I do paint in oil as well, but I find I want to layer. And so the acrylics really suit and the mixed media suit my process a little bit better than oil does for studio work. Mm-hmm. So because of the layering and the ability to get such beautiful textures on the surface, it, you know, really was good practice for balancing elements and principles of design. And I know that sounds pretty basic, but you know, really, even a color field is dealing with elements and principles of design. Realism is dealing with elements and principles. Cubism, all the isms. So it was a really good practice for balancing values or colors or shapes. And to me, those are some of the foundations for non-referential imagery and simplifying or abstracting or getting really good bones within your painting. Was that a good answer?
Yes, perfect. That worked out great. So, and it actually leads right into what I want to talk a little bit about next around the building imagery from abstract design. And I think it's true for whatever media that you're going to work with. We always try to simplify things to a very simple structure, if you will. Like, for example, let's just take a tree, and let's say that the trunk is a cylinder, and then the leaves and branches and that area can become a sphere, but then we use negative shape naturally to cut back out of that sphere to make the tree a little more desirable and not looking like a kindergarten painting. But, you know, so we always we kind of take everything back to a very, very, very simple structure. So if I have a simple structure, how do I go from that simple structure to building something, building that imagery with some abstract design in it that really pulls it? And if you want to use the painting up or any painting that photo that you sent us, just let us know and Sarah can pull that up. So,
well, I'd like to say first that I think what you might be, what I'd talk about first is your divisions of space.
Okay.
Within your surface. So mm-hmm. whether you do an abstract or a floral or a landscape or a portrait, you have to divide the space up into sections that feel comfortable. And if I use those divisions of space, I actually, if I divide those images up and they're really, really simple, I should be able to use those same divisions for a landscape, for an abstract, for a face, just because those divisions are right, and all I'm going to do is be inserting a subject matter into them by using shapes, other shapes on top of it. Does that make sense to you? Uh-huh. So let's say, for example, I've divided my surface into a T shape, and the T, the up and down part of the T is off to the side slightly. I could use that then to add textures and colors to create an abstract design or non-referential. I like to use that word non-referential more than abstract. And then I could use it for a landscape. I could put a face in that area and maybe have a chair in behind for the top of the tee. I could put a floral in and it would have that general shape. So my division of space is really, to me, the bones of the painting for your abstract design. And it's how we balance those lights and darks and colors. And if you use you have to know what is it you're trying to say. What is your message you want to communicate? And I've said this with other people, but I was taught in university, art is a communication of ideas in visual form. And so if we're trying to communicate something through our painting, what is that and how are we going to paint it? So figure out, is it referential or non-referential? And then from there, what subject are you going to use? And in that subject, what style? And then what elements and principles of design are you going to use to pull out that image so that people understand what it is you're trying to say? And all that starts from basic good bones, good divisions of space, good abstract or non-referential design.
Okay, so when we're talking about division of space, and like there's a couple tools that I use, and I know that we're probably going to get some questions on this, which is great because you're the teacher. So you're saying you're using a T, and I use, you know, rule of thirds a number of times. Are those similar, or is this something?
Well, I just used a T as an example.
Okay.
Thirds are a very traditional way of dividing your surface. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the abstract expressionists, they weren't interested in thirds at all. They pushed their ideas to the outside, and that's a really good exercise for people to try. Put something right smack dab in the middle and then see if you can balance it to make it look good. Push something way out to the outside somewhere. What do you have to do with that mark or that shape in order to balance it so that it feels comfortable? Mm-hmm. And so those are really good practice exercises. I did, in the last book that I wrote, Mixed Media Painting Workshop, I talked about how I took 50 pieces of watercolor paper and did a collage on each of them. And it was white paper and just different types of colors and patterns, lights and darks. I just wanted to make some unusual types of compositions with these collages. And it was really good practice with really looking and balancing and seeing what feels right. And I think, interestingly, our brains are kind of wired to all see beauty in a very similar manner. And when I teach a class and I do that exercise, I can put a red dot out to the corner, where not at a third, but at a very strange area of a page or a canvas. And then I can take another piece of paper that has black or gray or whatever, and I can move it around, and everybody in the class will say, that's the sweet spot. That's where it should be. And so I think part of it is learning to trust your intuition and go with it and not always be hung up by the rules.
Yeah, right. That rules are meant to be broken. So it's sometimes there's that. I'm staring at the portrait that's up right now, Jean, on the screen. Can you see that one?
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, and what I really love about this, and when you were talking about balance, it really, you know, it really like jumped out at me. And as I'm looking at it, on the left side of the face with the reds that go into the yellows, into the greens around her eye, and then that almost, but not all the way to the yellow, but almost that same reflection there on the right in her hair, mm-hmm. You know, how that balances one another. And then my eyes went over and found the really delicate white flower, almost, you know, like I would say maybe a half inch or not even that, it's about, yeah, about a half inch from the edge up there. So while you were talking and saying that, my eye was going around this painting and seeing some of the things that you were talking about in there. And it's just really interesting. Then the repeat, again, in her dark hair of almost the same type of shape. So it's really, this is really delicate. I really like this. So
this Well, this is really how I love to work right now. I start with a highly patterned colored background, and I want the background to look like it could hang as an abstract. I want it to look and feel good. And it's a great warm-up as well. And then I'll impose whatever the subject is, whether it's a portrait or a still life or whatever, onto this surface. And I know that there's a face there, but I really try not to be slavish to what is. I don't mind that some of those colors from the background come through. And just as you said, if I'm going to allow that, then I have to allow balancing those colors as I'm working throughout. And it might be, somebody might say, well, you'd never have, you know, green and pink dots around the eye. But if it feels right and it works and it's consistent throughout the whole painting, then, you know, why not if that's what's moving you right now? So, yeah.
Yeah. So this, tell us a little bit about, you obviously work with mixed media, different medias, and tell us, did you find just using one media to be like the stumbling block that kept you from going further into exploring things? So you brought in other materials or things that helped you take that next step into the world that you live in?
I think that's a really good question. Like I said earlier, I started in watercolor, and there's a lot of ideas with that particular medium about being pure. And if you look historically, it was never meant to be pure. It was painted on a darker paper, and they used body color or gouache to get their lights. But, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of push for just pure transparent watercolor. So I was kind of bucking the system, you know, many years ago by pushing opacity and transparency, thinking about opposites and what would happen if I put a really strong opaque next to a transparent. Well, the transparent really looks transparent and the opaque really looks opaque. And so they kind of support each other in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And so I think you get to a point with something like gouache where, you know, it's most gouache has a lot of chalk in it, and if I get too thick on paper, I'm kind of concerned about it cracking. So I move towards gesso, which is acrylic. It still has the same flatness, and I could work with that on paper. And then I found limitations to paper with regard to weight when you're framing and so on. And so I still work on paper. I still work with watercolor and mixed media on paper. But I do a lot of my larger pieces on canvas and board. This particular portrait, for example, is 48 by 48 inches, and it's on canvas.
Oh, wow.
And, so... anyway, switching then, you have to switch to oil or acrylic or something else that's going to bond with that particular ground. So I went into acrylics. And, you know, watercolor is a really great learning tool because you have to know exactly what each pigment is like because it's pretty raw. You have to know it's transparent, sedimentary, and opaque. Whereas when things get mushed into... you like that word, technical word, mush, into a polymer or into an oil base, they kind of lose some of that ability to show the granulation. But an opaque is an opaque, a transparent is a transparent. And you learn so much about how things can mix as a result of the transparency and when to bring things in, how to weave things, different pigments through a painting. So I found it a very good and transferable information to acrylic and to oil. I forgot what your question was.
did the ability to use other materials.
Yes. I think because of that, I kept pushing more things, you know, so I added gouache, I added gesso, and then I started, to, you know, playing around with collage because collage has very similar attributes. You can have very thin, transparent collage, thicker collage, and very, very opaque stuff, found objects like keys and coins and, you know, pieces of plastic and chunks. And then you can play with also the surface quality as far as relief is concerned. So looking at all of these different kinds of concepts and pushing them on a two-dimensional surface, I find really interesting.
Right. So if I'm, I guess I'm taking two different things from our conversation so far. One of them is that you have to have very good knowledge of what the materials that you're going to be using, how they're going to react as you're playing and exploring. But there's another part of you that basically just says, is fearless and just says, you know, I'm just going to try this and see what happens. And then from that you learn how that particular material reacts to whatever it is that you're trying to do. So that freedom, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think there's two or three things that come into this, and I should say them before they leave my brain.
Great. Because that's what I'm trying to do is stimulate those thoughts. So go ahead.
Okay. I think you have to know your materials. You know, you have to know their strengths and weaknesses. And the best way to know the materials is to play with them. Mm-hmm. And especially, and that's where, you know, making these grounds are really great, because you do get to know what this particular medium and that do when they react together. And you can reproduce similar looks over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important. But I think that we're supposed to be creative human beings, and if I personally start doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, I start to feel like I'm a cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. And the exploration part of the painting for me is very, very necessary to keep learning and to keep pushing myself.
Absolutely. So that was actually really great. I mean, I keep stumbling as like my brain keeps throwing out all these other questions that I'd love to ask, and one of them I'm gonna kind of go away from, well, no, I guess it is more question number five that I had sent to you previous to this, Jean. But before we get into that, I wanted to remind everyone, if you have questions, to type them into the chat area, and Sarah is actually going through those as they come in, and she will be asking those when Jean and I finish our conversation here. So, Jean, as an oil painter, and strictly basically an oil painter, that probably follows way too many rules, even though I'm getting more courage and pushing some things as I start playing with my palette knife. Do you have, or did you have before you started doing what you're doing, because it's obvious that you have these strengths and certain foundational elements that, you know, are either true to watercolor or oil painting, like understanding value and understanding composition and all of those key words that we hear a lot about. And, you know, before you go into some kind of abstract form of exploration, do you need to have that solid understanding of those foundational elements, or do you just encourage, could you encourage a newbie to go and do the things that you're doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think whenever you explore, you learn. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter if you're a newbie or somebody who's been painting for 40 years, learning is exciting and fun, and it helps us then to solve problems that we may come across with future subsequent paintings. And part of the problem solving is partly what keeps me involved and intrigued with painting and the arts. If it was easy, it would become boring and I would go and do something else.
Okay.
But I also want to say you have to maybe liken it to learning a language.
Okay.
You know, you have to learn the words, the vocabulary, how to string a sentence together. I haven't, you know, I'm not able to converse in another language, but I've been told that after a while something clicks and you can just speak without translating from your first language to your second language. And I think that's kind of what we're doing here. We have a visual language, and you have to know those elements and principles, and you have to know your materials really well, and you have to know who you are and what it is you want to say in order for that to just start coming out. So you play, you practice, you know that stuff, and then you get into your zone, into that creative right-left zone of our brains, and the magic happens, and it's terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the painting that's, I want you to walk through this painting, because as I was looking through this, were you focusing on edges on this particular piece? Because there's one beautiful edge right here as we come in around her neck and into her shoulder line. And I was sitting thinking, oh, and then look at all the soft edges that are around it. And then I was like, well, that, is that the only hard edge that's in here? And it's like, well, no, it's not quite as hard, but there still are some other hard edges in here. So walk us through what you were thinking. And, I mean, do you actually start with what you're feeling at the time and then the artwork goes to that? Or do you find the picture of the woman and then decide what you want to do with it from that point on? So just kind of talk through this one for us.
Okay.
I love this one.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites too.
Yeah.
But I think edges and line always been one of my favorite elements. Mm. I think because I in university I loved figure drawing. I loved drawing from life. I loved picking up a conte or a charcoal and applying different textures. But with a brush, we have a little bit more difficulty getting those same types of edges and lines that you can, you know, when you compare to a charcoal or a conte. And with the mixed media, I mean, with a brush you can get a smooth, a hard, a crackly edge, but it's not quite the same. So with working with other media, I can take a colored pencil, I can take watercolor crayons, I can take, you know, chunks of stuff that have hard edges or ripped edges, and I can really work that element of design. But edges and lines are always going to be less important. They're less dominant in the world of elements of design than other elements. So they're kind of like in a movie, they're always going to be a walkthrough. They're always going to be like a percussion or something in music. So they're just going to enrich, enhance, but they'll never be the total focus because they're always described by value or color.
Okay.
So, but yes, this particular piece, I started off with a ground, and again, I used all kinds of different mediums and collage. I had a model and sketched her out. I've used different quick sketches of her over time. And I sketched her, put this image onto this, and just pulled her out. But at some point, after I get her bones, her structure on there, I try to forget that it is a person, and I start to go back to those elements of design again and say, gee, it would be really cool if I had red here and red there. The red wasn't ever there in reality, but is it making the painting a better painting visually? Mm-hmm. And so that's how my head works. You know, okay. So she might have a red circle in her hair or turquoise, but the turquoise to me was necessary to balance the turquoise in the background. And if mm-hmm. she is the focus, then I have to make sure that I've got a reason for the viewer to know that my story is about her and not the background.
Right. Right. So which is this acrylic?
It's acrylic, mediums acrylic. There's also collage and colored pencil. And yeah, collage, colored pencil, and acrylic.
And this collage, that the one piece is, we come in from the left and there's the light area of it almost looks like a fabric. Is that what you're saying is collage? Or I don't understand.
At the very top left, you'll see uh-huh. up high, you'll see kind of a geometric shape. There's a piece uh-huh. of collage there. There's half moon shapes that are collaged in. There's a big chunk on her left shoulder.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, there's little bits of collage underneath or on or through her in different places.
Ah, okay.
What's kind of interesting about putting larger chunks of collage on a piece so that you have relief is it should look, for me, really good when you're looking at it from, you know, 4 or 6 feet away, and then you come up and you notice that there's this change in elevation. on the surface. And as the day goes on, you might get shadows, and it's going to change with lighting, which I find kind of interesting as well.
Right. Yeah. When I teach my students oil painting, I always at some point in time say, go stand in Cleveland and look at it. And Cleveland is, you get away from your easel. And I'm in Cincinnati, so it's like that reference of that many miles away. So they kind of laugh because it's just like, go stand in Cleveland. And it's like, okay, I got to get 6 or 10 feet away from this thing so I can look at it.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's I could say go stand in Cleveland too from Calgary, you know.
Well, there you go. That works. So I'm gonna go off subject here a second, Jean, because seeing your work and then meeting you over at Track like we did and having the discussion and knowing how much of a fan you are of Odd Nerdrum.
Oh yes.
Tell me how you got there, because your work is so different than his, is where I'm coming from. But well, I'm assuming he influenced you somehow.
I don't know. I think what it is, you know, Roger Scruton was also speaking at that conference. I went to the conference because of Roger Scruton and Odd Nerdrum, because they speak of beauty in artwork. And I think it's excellent to have a concept, critical thinking. I think it makes our work richer. Mm-hmm. I can enjoy something wonderful about all the different isms that have developed over the last 150 years. But I personally, even if you're talking about war or abortion or something distasteful, I still want a certain amount of aesthetics or beauty or something there, unless the concept is so strong it blows me away, you know? So I think when I look at Odd Nerdrum's work and I see somebody that's working in a Greco-Roman way like Rembrandt in today when we've had so much non-referential and conceptual stuff around, and that stuff is great, but There's been a void of this other stuff, and I really see a resurgence of it coming, and I'm excited about that. But he had so much emotion in the faces. There was some disturbing paintings that leave you uncomfortable. And when I saw some of the originals when we were at the conference, mm-hmm. I could see these wonderful textures that I had no idea that he had, that kind of reminded me of acrylic mixed media stuff. So when you look at his backgrounds, I think you can see very simplified, really cool attention to textures, and then he has, you know, just slipped these images into the painting to tell his story so the viewer knows what it's all about. So I think that for some reason his imagery connected and spoke to me. But I could say that about a lot of different artists in different genres. I just thought it was really unusual, and what a great opportunity to meet somebody, you know, that's from Europe. And Roger Scruton, I've really enjoyed listening to his BBC presentations on why these things matter. And I tend to read books on how we're wired and why we see things the way we do. And I find that all quite interesting.
Yeah.
But and to me, the subject is kind of irrelevant. I mean, you've got another piece up right now, and it's what you call abstract or non-referential. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's just about divisions of space and balancing those elements and principles of design. So if I organize my circles, squares, and triangles in a different way in this piece, I might have had a pear, I might have had trees, I might have had a face, but I've organized them in such a way that there's nothing really super recognizable. But it still feels like those shapes, divisions of space, color, values, they feel comfortable to me.
Okay. I just wanted to add in that I actually talk about being nervous, because you had told me in the green room that you were a little bit out of your comfort zone here, and you're doing an excellent job, by the way. I actually got to interview Roger and talk about sweating.
I bet.
Yeah, I mean, the man knows, so, you know, when you talk about beauty and all this kind of stuff, it's just like, how do I ask an intelligible question to this man? You know, it is, but he was such a sweetheart, and he was so good at answering my questions, and and actually just showing up, because we did some live broadcasts from track that year, and it was amazing. He walked in, my husband showed him into the room where we were broadcasting in, and he walked in, and I thought, oh my gosh, he actually wrote down to come talk to me. This is so exciting. And yeah, so I mean, it was great. I want to take you through, because we have a little bit of time here before I jump into a couple more questions, but I had one instructor who lived in the abstract world, if you will, and she did something rather interesting, because she came in and was teaching a class of oil painters who basically wanted to paint like, you know, impressionist or representational style. And, you know, she was very much into her abstract world. And at that time, the folks that I was that were learning with me in this weren't really ready to open up yet. I mean, we were still trying to figure out the rules and the words and the verbs and the nouns and all that kind of stuff of painting. But she did something really, really interesting. She came in with a slideshow of photographs that she had taken and how, from those photographs, she came up with her abstract. So, for example, she would walk around a junkyard and there would be the inner wheels of a tire. And then she would pick these things, these materials up, and she would put them in a certain arrangement, and then she would take a picture of it, and then she would go back to her studio, and she would start pulling it, you know, making this abstract that didn't look anything like the photograph that she took. It was an interesting process to watch her go through this abstraction, you know, building the imagery itself, which I know we might be getting a lot of questions around, you know, well, you tell us a little bit more about that. But it's almost to me like your guys' minds work differently than mine does, having to say that. Because I just, for me, I can't get to that abstraction. But I know if I did, my work would be so much stronger in in presentation.
There's a really easy exercise that you can do to take yourself from realism to abstract back to realism again. And it's an exercise. So take an old master's painting like a Vermeer and put some frosted mylar over it and just trace the simple shapes. That's your division of space. That's your bones.
Okay.
But don't show any details. And then when you look at that, it looks like an abstract design. And it looks great. The divisions of space are great. And so your friend who is going out and zooming in is really doing that using a camera. She's looking at those divisions of space so that the balance, so that there's a heavy spot and a little spot and another, you know, and it feels comfortable. So you should be able to take that simplified Vermeer design and turn it upside down and then paint an abstract on it. You should then be able to take that same abstract design and rotate it a quarter turn and then put a still life on it using those same divisions so it's a really good exercise if you're interested in trying something like that. Probably would work better with acrylic because the oil is all mucky, but it's a really good thing to kind of get your head around. It's not about the subject. It's really about these divisions and the elements of design.
Right. So. Yeah, and then there is some things that a couple of our mentors have instilled, which are, you know, drawing a little mini composition, if you will, of what you're looking at. Like, we do this in plain air and different things like that. And then, again, you're not interested in, per se, how many trees are standing there or, you know, what's the fountain I'm drawing or whatever. What you're looking at is actually, like you said, division of shape, maybe more so around value, which helps us then to define that shapes. So it's really kind of, yeah, it was really, oh, I like this one too. Sorry, I just turned around and looked at my monitor. I love this one. So mini compositions is one way that I know that I try to get some kind of abstract design into my painting. I'll do a number of just I had to do actually when I was being mentored by Kevin McPherson and over at the Artist Mentors Online site that, that Kevin and I started together. He had us do 100 mini compositions, or just 2x2 squares, and then dividing that shape so that we could start to get that feeling in there. So that's another really quick, easy thing to do. Just draw a bunch of 2-inch squares and then just start dividing up that to see some of these abstract things start to happen. So, yeah, and then, like you said, insert in those areas. Go ahead, Jean.
Yeah. Kevin's great. No, I just think that's, I was just saying, yeah, that's really a great exercise.
Yeah.
I just, I got excited when you were talking and I had to butt in.
No, that's okay. That's fine. Yeah, so there are exercises that, that are a little more structured that can get you to talk that way. I think the one that Jean was talking about is an excellent way of looking at it, too. So two ways there that we can think about. So let's talk a little bit about when you go out and you start teaching a workshop. And there's probably certain things that happen in each of those workshops. And what I'm trying to get to is, do you think we as artists put too many restrictions on ourselves?
Oh, yeah. I think that happens all the time. And I hear it all the time when I teach, well, you know, I was told I can't do this. Or fear. Fear puts huge restrictions on us, you know, fear of using too much paint because we don't want to waste it, fear of trying something new in case, you know, your husband or wife or a gallery doesn't like it, fear of failure, fear of success, all these things really prevent us from trying new things and setting rules for ourselves, and it becomes, I think, comfortable. And comfort is good, but I think if it becomes too comfortable, it'll show and your work will be hollow. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have some kind of passion and some, you want your work to have almost a soul of its own so that it inspires and creates a dialogue with the viewer.
Yeah. It's almost really just listening to your voice, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's part of that. Because when you were talking about your process, you talk about you decide up front basically what your story is going to be, right? What this is going to be about. You don't, you know, where I may be standing there going, okay, where are my rule of thirds, and I'm going to paint this here, and I'm going to move this over here, which is some freedom, but not as, I don't think, free as what, you know, we're talking about, where we would actually look at the thing and say, what's this actually telling me first, mm-hmm. you know, before I go into to the actual planning stage?
Well, you know, I have this little pocket guide that I self-published several years ago, and I talk about really all this stuff because every time I go and do a critique somewhere, they said, well, gee, that kind of makes sense. Do you have that written down? And I finally wrote it down, and it took a little bit longer to write than an actual book because you're condensing and simplifying into just 20 little pages that fit into a bag. But I talk about intentions. What are your intentions? And even if you're a process painter, where you might not have intentions right at the beginning, somewhere along your process, you have to come up with intentions in order to bring the whole thing together so that it's unified, right? Mm-hmm. But the third thing that you were talking about, I'd like to get back to. And so in this little pocket guide that I have, you know, thirds is one of the things that, you know, everybody's heard of, one third, one. And it's a really good way to work because those intersections of thirds are always really good hot spots for somebody to put their center of interest. There's also the armature of a rectangle so that you draw all these different lines from corner to corner, middle to middle, and so on. And the more intersection of lines you get, the hotter the spot is for, you know, putting your center of interest. And then you can have secondary and tertiary places to put things within that rectangle according to the number of intersecting lines. Carl Rungius used to do that. So you'd see old masters and paintings from the past where they'll have all these lines and triangles and things intersecting, and Carl would have you know, the head of a goat intersecting on some of these things in a painting, and a mountaintop somewhere else intersecting, and that's how he made his divisions of space and constructed his story. And then there's also the golden rectangular mean, you know, so you have to have the perfect rectangle in order to figure out where that hot spot is. And then the abstract expressionists, who would just say, oh, I'm going to put it over here, bottom left corner. How am I going to deal with that problem now to balance it? So there's many different ways you can go about constructing your composition and coming up with some good basic bones in your design. And so maybe for those people who do work in thirds all the time, challenge yourself to put something in a really strange place and see if you can make it work.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's to me, that, I think that's the key for everything that we've been talking about today, is to get ourselves out of that comfort zone. So thank you for doing that with us and coming on and talking to us and stretching our thinking a little bit about, you know, well, let's mix this up a little bit. Let's step away from this and see, you know, how I can make this a, you know, an exciting painting if I get away from thirds, or if I decide to use one of the other methods that you were talking about, the rectangles, the golden mean, the different things like that. It's really kind of interesting too, because I there are times when I step away from the easel, and I think it's I step away from the easel to do other work, but it's also because maybe I have gotten a little too formulaic with my design, or you know, with what I'm doing or what I've been commissioned to do, and it's like, you know, I got to go down and paint this painting like this instead of going down and saying, why can't I just create something? And because I want to create from the, you know, and once we've gotten through that learning, you know, we need to like trust our eye a little bit more to know when something really looks good and not worry about the rules. So true with that. So give us some advice, and you've given us some already throughout the conversation, but how would you encourage your students to have that courage to go out and start exploring and experimenting with abstract design?
I think do some warm-ups. Start with put some music on and just have nothing in your mind, have nothing in your mind at all, and just make marks to the music. Dance to the music as you're doing it, and have a variety of music coming on. I do this a lot with my students, but it's a really good way to get rid of the fear, because if you're just painting to music and making marks, you can't make a mistake. It's and then after you go, oh, well, look at that mark, and look at that area where those two things collided. Isn't that interesting? How could I apply something like that to some of my more traditional practice? And so, you know, that's one way I think you could, you know, really push yourself and have fun and not even know you're getting outside your comfort zone, because it's a fun warm up. Just use, you know, some cheap paper and bang, 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 over and over and over again.
Yeah, I have a really interesting student who just started with me down at the Art Center taking lessons, and he came in and said that he wanted to learn how to paint in oils, and I said, okay, that's why I'm here. But he has such freedom and no fear. Like, one of the things he was talking about, he has, I think it's his grandchild, that was sitting in a plastic, like, container, not with the top off. I'm not sure why. She probably crawled in there, for all I know. But, you know, she kind of, like, put her hands against the plastic, and then naturally the tongue had to taste the plastic. So she has her mouth open and the tongue on this. And he took a picture of this because he found it really interesting. And now he wants to make this oil painting. And I was like, okay. I said, yeah, we can do that. So he traced it out, you know, he drew it out and all this kind of stuff. And then he says to me, like, halfway through this, you know, what I want to do is I want to put all the oil there, and then I want to take an iron, and I want to, like, run an iron over the face to make it look smeared, like the plastic on it. And I was just like, giving him, yeah, I know. I was sitting there going, Jeff, what are you doing here? Just go play. You know, it's like, don't worry about these rules that you want to learn from me. Go play, you know. Yeah. So it was kind of interesting because he's doing it with oil paints. I said, my only concern with the oil paint is if you put heat to it, like an iron straight on it, that you might separate the pigment and the oils in it. So I'm not. He was asking me what I thought would happen, and I'm like, I've never done it, but go and do it and tell me what happens. So, but he's, you know, and I'm trying to like teach him things, but not take into account the fact that he is fearless and that he loves to try and explore, and I don't want to take that away from him. So it's really a challenge for me to be trying to teach him, you know, different things with oil paints. And you know, and I keep telling him, I said, he'll say something to me like, you know, well, what if I do this? And I'm like, I don't know, but let's give it a try, you know. So I don't think I'm really teaching him very much, but he's like teaching me a lot. But it's really kind of interesting that he has no rules and he wants to go out and create this. And I just found it really, really interesting that he came to me and basically said, you know, I have to learn the rules. And I'm like, just go play, you know, and if you got something cool coming out, you know. So I'm wondering how long he's actually going to stay in the class, number one, because that's not what the class is about, what he wants to do. But he's been, you know, listening to me, and you know, we've been talking about, you know, the painting, and I tell him, you know, certain things. But just the fact that he'll come in the next class and say, you know, I want to try to do this, and you know, or I did this at home, and it's just, you know, don't. I guess that the moral of that story is, don't dampen down the. If you got a really wild idea, don't dampen it down. Try it and see what happens to it. Yeah. So, have you run across? Go ahead.
That's really, yeah. Of course. I do think. I think it's. I'm losing my voice. I think it's really good to know as much as you can about the materials and the rules and all that. Because if you are like this gentleman you're speaking of and you just go at it, those rules can help you, if they're in your back pocket, to solve a problem if something comes up. Because whenever you're right. painting by the seat of your pants, so to speak, you know, usually things don't go as smoothly as if you plan it out. So the great thing about it is there'll be an energy and an energy is a good word in the work that could be lost if you are planning too much and things become too stiff. But right. you can also come up with issues, problems, because you haven't planned. So having all that knowledge in your back pocket, I think, is a great idea for those times when you need to pull it out because something didn't go quite right. So I think he's smart to say he does need to learn the rules from you because he must recognize that things aren't always going smoothly, but he has this desire to be bold.
Right, and one of the things that I think that, you know, I always try to do when I do teach is, and I'm sure you do the same, Jean, is I don't want to dampen the voice, and I don't want to dampen the courage or the desire to go outside of a comfort zone. I never want to dampen that. I have someone who paints with very, very bright, vivid colors. That's not me. You know, I don't paint that way, but it works for her. And, you know, and it's, again, in her back pocket, I'm standing there going, this drawing area doesn't look good. This is out of balance here. This doesn't, you know. So we still talk fundamentals. And but yet I don't tell her that's the wrong color. You know, I tell her, okay, you got this great color over here, but now we got to balance it. Let's talk about compliments. You know, right. things like that. So we go, and that's the way she's learning. That, so absolutely. It was so different. Typically, when the students come in, what I typically see is, you know, fear of putting a brushstroke down. That fear was not with this gentleman. So it was really interesting for me to kind of stand back and go, okay, great, he doesn't have fear, so now, you know, and how do I not dampen that? How do I not instill fear in him and still let him be very, very creative? So thank you for for your coaching. So I think that kind of like puts it in reference for me to be able to help him a little more.
I think that's great. You know, really, we're facilitators.
Yes.
We're facilitators of the growth and development of artists who take our class so that they can strengthen their own personal voice and direction. And yeah. So you give them concepts, and then they have to figure out through those, you know, what are your intentions, what subject, you know, do you know all that stuff, and what style suits you the best? Do you have your own style, or are there are certain types of styles that really resonate with you? And then how are you going to present that? So I think that's, for me, the way that I teach, because that's the only way that they're going to come up with something that's authentic and really resonates with the viewer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell us quickly what workshops you have coming up and where they're going to be, and then we're going to go and take questions from the folks that are listening.
All right. Well, the next workshop that I have coming up is going to be in Florida, in St. Petersburg. And I just taught last fall in Florida. What a great group of artists in the St. Pete area. Yeah, I just had a blast, and they enjoyed my workshop so much that they've invited me back. So it's Florida Artist Workshops, and it's hosted by Vanessa C. Graves. And okay. It will be March 25th to 28th. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. So that's the next one coming up. And what's not to like about Florida?
Yeah, especially in March.
Especially when you're in Calgary, when we can get snow at any moment. Right. But it's, yeah. And then I'm going to be traveling to Italy. You may have heard of a big art exhibition that happens in Fabriano. It's by invitation only, and I believe there's about 10 or 15 artists from America. We've got some from Canada going, and all across the world. So this exhibition will take place in Fabriano. I haven't been to Italy before. I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and then I'll spend a bit of time in Rome, in the Rome area as well. But that's not a workshop. It's just a fun travel experience. May 30th to June 5th, I'll be teaching for the Idaho Watercolor Society. Mm-hmm. And I'll be doing their national exhibit as well during that time. Mm-hmm. July 11th to 15th, I'll be teaching at Red Deer College, and that's in Alberta. Now, if you have never heard of Red Deer College, you should learn about it. They have, for, I don't know, 30 years, put on a summer school in the college. It's called Summer Series, and they invite folks from all over the world to come and teach. There's 4 weeks. Each workshop is 1 week long, and there's a variety of different media. So there's clay, felting, glass, oil, acrylic, printmaking, all kinds of really cool things. And the instructors are just top-notch. I've been teaching there for, I think, 12 or 15 years myself. But it's just a wonderful place. You go, you stay in res, you get to paint till 10 or 11 at night at the college. So I highly recommend it.
Oh, great.
If you haven't done that before. And then I'll be teaching in Vermont in July. There's also Buffalo Thunder in Santa Fe at the end of October.
Okay.
And it's a big conference that happens. I also do what's called a 4x4. So I meet people 4 times a year for 4 days. This year it's already started, so you have to kind of sign up and commit for the whole year. But it's really, it's not a concept-based situation. It's really a workshop or four workshops that really push people to figure out what direction they should be going in. Ah. And I've had a very good response with that. I have already a wait list for next year, so if anybody's interested in that, that happens in Calgary, so you would have to travel to Calgary. If you're from the States, it's really good time because our dollar is not doing so well. So you'd you know, pretty well make 30% on your investment there with your U.S. dollar. But anyway, so that's another thing that I'm up to. So that's in the near future.
Okay, and are all these listed out on your website?
They are, yeah.
Okay, so your website is?
My website is Jean Peterson, PEDERSON.com. Okay. And yeah, feel free to email me at artform, artform at telus, telus.net. So if you have any questions, give me a holler.
Right. And we're actually going to, Sarah, you can unmute yourself now because I'm sure we have some questions for Jean.
We actually don't have any yet. So I just want to invite everyone to please type your questions into the questions section of the GoToWebinar control panel, and I can relay those on your behalf. So please type those questions in there.
Yeah. And while we wait, Jean, is there anything else that maybe we haven't captured for building imagery from abstract design that you'd like to add?
Well, right now there's a piece up that you can have a look at that's an abstract or non-referential piece. This piece was, I think, 3 feet by 6 feet on canvas. And so, again, just dealing with divisions of space, I think it would be very easy to turn this abstract into a floral. It would be easy to turn it into a landscape, just because the bones are there, and I would just have to add more shapes or change up my colors or my figure out what elements of design I want to push to bring out those ideas. But I can already see these things coming through if I wanted to go in that direction. So maybe that would be a good thing for listeners to try is just taking their canvas or their board and coming up with some really interesting divisions of space and then imposing their subject right into it using those divisions of space.
Okay. Well, I saw one question come in about, is the session recorded and can you see it later? Yes, it is recorded, as Sarah has said, and it will be at the Artist Network YouTube page, or it will be in the Art Chat library on my website as well. I link off of Sarah's link there on Artist Network so that it's all out on my website as well. So that's good. Is there another photo that we have of Jean's work, Sarah, that we can share?
I believe we're on the last. Oh, yeah, there's another one.
Oh, this one's interesting.
Yeah, this is the last one.
Okay. So, and again, if you have any questions, please type them in.
This was a demonstration that I did at Rudyard College when I was teaching there, I think last year. And I was talking about mechanical and organic, those concepts, and what they mean. So if you just do a painting and that's your theme, this is what I came up with. So the mechanical is using, you know, the squares, the lines, the stencils, and the organic, that's just a big chunk of my palette that I glued onto the surface. And the little black piece at the bottom is actually a piece of a record. So a piece of vinyl that was... But again, it's about balance and you know, trying to see if you can come up with unusual weight distribution of these elements of design so that it feels comfortable, something that I'd be intrigued to look at for some time. But again, I could see putting a floral in there. I could see putting a face right where that blob of stuff is instead of the collage, or right on top of the collage. So, just keep your process open and try things and see what happens and where it takes you. And you might come up with something that's really unique. And, you know, people like to see something that's a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's really, I've enjoyed looking at your work through the talk, so I hope everybody else has as well. And thank you for walking us through some of them as well. So, Sarah, if we don't have any other questions, have any come in?
We did just get one from Dina. Do the same elements of design apply to abstract after division of space, value, color, trump, shape, line?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the tools that we use. I call them building blocks. Those are the building blocks for any subject, any style, any ism. everyone's using those value, color, shape, line, texture, edge, all that is used no matter what the subject. And it's important to understand how to use those elements because they're not all created equally because our brains process those things in different ways. So for example, and I talk about this when I teach workshops, but our eyes have rods and cones. That's a scientific fact. We have more black and white receptors in our eyes than we have color receptors. So value contrast we recognize first. And that's just a fact. It trumps all the other elements. And that's why a lot of people use value contrast, because it's just a more natural way of drawing the viewer's eye from A to B to C. If you don't want value to be the most important element, you have to reduce the contrast of value so you don't have light and dark together. You have mediums. If you have a row of a value chart from white to black and all the grays in between, contrast is when you put the black and white or strong changes next to each other. So if you put values that are very similar to each other next to each other, that will not draw the viewer's eye. And you can use something like color then as the star in your painting. So you have to know those elements of design and understand how they manipulate the viewer to look in different places in order to create a good abstract or a good floral or a good portrait. At least that's my two bits.
Yeah. Thank you. Anything else out there? Last chance. I'm going to let Jean go back to painting and or creating, I should say, if we don't have any other questions. So.
Yeah, I don't see any yet. So if you guys have any, like Linda said, get them in. In the meantime, I just want to remind everyone real quick that we have been recording today's session. Like Linda said, we'll send it out or it'll be up on our YouTube. And also, we have a special discount for all of our Art Chat listeners to use at northlightshop.com. And that is simply Art Chat 10 for 10% off your entire order. So be sure to take advantage of that coupon code if you shop with us at Northlight Shop. And also, we encourage you to visit artistnetworkuniversity.com and artistnetwork.tv for some more online art instruction, so be sure to check out those resources. And, of course, visit us at artistnetwork.com anytime. All right, well, I'll pass it back to you, Linda, and see if you guys have anything else you want to share before we go.
Okay. Jean, last comments?
Oh, it's just been a lot of fun. Thank you for having me here, and really appreciated the chat. And going through this process was interesting and new and scary for me, so that's out of my...
You did great. So I appreciate that you took the time to talk with us, and I think that this particular art chat will actually get some folks thinking hopefully in a different direction, and will really start them to encourage them to, you know, strike out and start exploring and maybe put some rules in their back pocket and just see what happens if they do that. So I found that I was very, very encouraging that way. So I appreciate your time, and it's always great to talk with you. You know that. So maybe we'll catch another track conference or some other conference in here in the near future. So.
Well, we just have to plan it, Linda.
I guess we're going to have to do that. So, and then next month, I believe it's March 16th. Let me pull up my calendar real quick. Let me look here. Yes, March 16th, we will be talking with Tony Pro, and I will be on the probably a phone call with Tony in the next couple days to figure out what exactly we'll be talking about. But Tony has just took a new position in Texas at the Kopenny Academy, and we'll probably talk to him a little bit about that and what he sees as his vision while he's there. And we'll also be talking about his work, naturally, his artwork and stuff. So tune in then on March 16th at 1 o'clock.